I'm gonna tell you something. If you two never bother with me again in the rest of my life, I ain't giving up Facebook. I can't. I can't. There's good friends of mine on the fucking face.
Well, he's a boy, you have to do what he tells you.
See, that's why I said to you before, you don't understand what an officer means, that the boss is your boss. Understand?
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I'm your host, Hollywood Wade. We hope everyone has been enjoying these Behind the Gangster episodes. I know I definitely have. Myself and Anthony Ruggiano have had a blast doing these. They're really informative, especially for people that maybe know a name and don't know a whole lot about that specific character. And we break down a little bit about them. Also, how they've been portrayed in some of the films, such as Goodfellas and Gotti and things like that. We're going to be expanding into some other films here soon as well. But it's just a little interesting walk down memory lane with some of these guys. A lot of stuff in this I found out about Angelo that I didn't even know about his brother and how big of a narcotics trafficker his brother was. So really interesting stuff here. So let's not beat around the bush and get right into it with Angelo Quack Quack Ruggiero on Behind the Gangster.
Hi, everybody. My name is Anthony Ruggiano Jr. I want to welcome everybody to Reformed Gangsters, and I want to welcome Wade back to the show.
How you doing, my friend? Good
I'm
to be here.
Good. I'm doing good. Welcome back.
Thank you. Well, these Behind the Gangsters are going real good, man. A lot of people seem to like them on the social medias, and, you know, we have a lot of the mainstay names, you know, like Gotti, Jimmy Burke, Tommy DeSimone, but we're going to get into a few guys today, a little bit of the, not necessarily back players, but ones that weren't front and center. One of them, to be specific, Angelo Ruggiero. I think they called him Quack Quack.
Quack Quack, yeah, because he walked like a duck. Yeah, you know, I mean, I know him so long. And yeah, you know, and like I said at a earlier show, you know, I watch these movies and, you know, these are people I knew intimately. And it's always hard for me to, you know, like, the movies never live up to the real person, you know, more or less. And some of them are good and some of them aren't. But it's always weird for me to see these movies about people that I knew, that like things people I had dealings with, and he's one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, he's and I just saw a clip the other day on YouTube of a sit down with Armin Assante in the Gotti movie, and they were sitting down at a table, and the guy that was in The Sopranos that played Pussy,
Benny Pastore,
he played Angelo, and you know, and sort of he sort of is built like Angelo, you know, Angelo was a stocky guy and always had a cigarette in his hand, and it's funny because the scene in the movie was about Angelo smoking, and he ironically died of lung cancer from smoking. I mean, he always had a cigarette in his hand, and he was always hyped up, you know? So, but yeah, how he's portrayed in the movie, you know, like I knew the guy personally, you know, I had some dealings with the guy, you know, there would never be, you know, people ask me about John Gotti. There wouldn't have been a John Gotti if there wasn't an Angelo Quack Quack. I mean, he actually was a kingmaker, I mean, basically.
Wow. Now he was, his uncle was actually a Neo, right?
Yeah, they were, I believe they were related. I mean, he always said he was his uncle. You know, I don't know if it was a blood relation or, but there was something, some kind, but he was very, very close with O'Neill, and it's terrible how he winded up. You know, at the end, after Neil died and John became the boss, you know, they shelved Angelo, you know, nobody was talking to him. And it's funny because he was a character, and when he got, after he got arrested on that case, with Jeannie, he wasn't allowed to come around, and he would a van would pull up in front of the Cafe Liberty, my father's club, and Tony Lee and I would walk out to the van and get in it, and he would be in the back of the van, you know. But you couldn't see in the van, and he was in the back of the van because he was coming to meet Tony, because Tony Lee actually got indicted on a case with all of them and Kennedy Airport, but it started with him. And then Frank DeWop's kitchen was bugged, and Tony had meetings with Frank DeWop, who was a Lucchese guy, and it was a whole big thing. But Angelo used to drive around in his van and meet with people.
Well, another reason why I heard that that Quack Quack name stuck was he would talk a lot, lot openly, and probably a little bit more than he should. And a lot of those guys practiced, because there was a number of bugs, like you mentioned, that was planted in his house. I think some of the stuff that they got from his house then allowed them to go put the bugs that we talked about on the Paul Castellano episode.
Yes.
And a lot of that was, you know, brought down a lot of heat. Eventually, I think it was him, John Carniglia was all brought down. And that is eventually what wound up letting him to be shelved. How do you think that affected him? Because, you know, some of these guys that, you know, this is their life. How do you think being shelved affected him? I know he didn't have much of a life left.
He was already sick when he got shelved. He already had the lung cancer. And I don't know, I think he understood that it was something that John had to do. I mean, now John's the boss, you know. This guy, the tapes were horrible. I mean, he talked, even, you know, it's funny because we talk about how much he talked. He was like my father, before my father got arrested in 84, he was my father's main source of information. Like, my father used to pump him for, he would tell my father everything. Like, I mean, he told my father literally everything. My father always got information out of him. So it was comical. He just throw up and tell my father everything. But I think he understood it. I mean, I never had any conversations with him. I mean, like, he still was coming around meeting people. Tony Lee never shunned him. My father's partner always spoke to him. When he died, everybody went to his funeral. I mean, it wasn't like nobody was, like, there was people that died that we weren't allowed to go to their funerals. Like, we were told blatantly, do not go to this funeral, you know?
Right.
I think he more or less understood. I think it was like more political than anything. I don't know if he took it to heart, like he was sick, because, I mean, he was a killer. I mean, he was, you know, he was a man. I mean, he did a lot of work for them. I mean, you know, when he took over his brother Sally's heroin business, you know, they did a lot of damage. A lot of people, from what I understand, disappeared. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a major heroin ring. You know, I knew his brother Sally really good. Sally even got me out of the 106th precinct once when I was a kid. I got arrested, and his brother Sal heard about it and came and got me out of the precinct. So there was a lot of things going on. You know, he was involved in a lot of things, and you know, he wouldn't give up the tapes. I mean, he might have got shelved at the end because he was talking a lot, but he was a tough guy. I mean, when Paul Castellano wanted those tapes, if you listen to the tape, they always play where he says, I'm not giving up those tapes. There's friends of mine on those tapes, because he knew if he gave those tapes up, other people were going to get implicated on selling heroin.
Yep.
And a lot of other people would have got hurt because Paul was against heroin trafficking. So, you know, he was a man. You know, did he get shelved? Yeah. Was it political? That's my personal belief. It was more political than anything. Should he have got shelved? I don't know. He did, you know. But he was still a man in everybody's eyes.
Well, and he had a long history of dealing heroin. If you watch the 96 Gotti movie, you know, John makes reference to that, or Armando Santi makes reference to that multiple times, along with his brother Gene. Was he tighter with Gene or with John? Because it sounds like he'd done a lot of drug dealings with Gene, but loved John.
He loved John. They were like brothers. I mean, Gene was a lot younger than them, but he was very tight with Gene. But John was his guy. They were like inseparable. It's like Tony Lee and my father were partners, and Angelo and John. You know, when you said Tony Lee, you always said Andy. When you say John, you always say Angelo. Quack. Mm-hmm. You know, they were hand in hand. Like I said earlier, there would have been no John Gotti if there was no Angelo. You know, he put that together. That hit on Paul Castellano, Angelo put that all together. He's the guy that went around and put that all together. John didn't put that together. John implemented it, but Angelo put it together.
Yeah, Angelo went and met with a bunch of people to see if they could get on board. One of them, I believe, being Sammy Gravano, because at the time they weren't sure where he was going to land on it.
Exactly.
And yeah, you're right. He put a lot of that stuff together. Right. So now the 96 film, they didn't really dive too much into him being shelved. They did go into that he had cancer and he was about to die. I think there's a scene where Amon goes and is feeding him like ice cream or something and I don't know where he's at, some sort of hospital or something. But now in the one that Travolta did, they did go into a little bit of detail of him having to be shelved. And that's pretty interesting. Like, some of these stories give you some insight and some don't. What do you think was the biggest reasons? Obviously, like you said, you know, some people were going to get you know, possibly killed, if worst case thrown in jail. What do you think was some of the bigger reasons that he didn't give up the tapes? I mean, who all do you think was on those tapes?
Probably everybody, except my father and Tony Lee. They're the only two people I know definitely didn't sell heroin. And that was one of the biggest arguments I had with my father, because people used to come into his bar and offer him keyloads of heroin, like, and he would tell them no. And I used to tell him, what are you doing? Man, let's, you know, are you crazy? You're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars here. And he used to tell me, here's my... that's blood money. You know, that's blood money. And then he would tell me, he goes, I'll be the one that they'll kill. You know, I'll be the one that the commission will kill for selling heroin. I'll be the one they make an example out of. You know, listen, everybody was selling heroin, everybody. So who was on those tapes? Probably Eddie Leno, probably, you know, other wise guys, that Frankie DeChico, who, you know, probably everybody was on those tapes that were wise guys or captains, mm-hmm. and he wouldn't give them up, because Paul would have, you know, if he was going to kill one of them, he couldn't pick and choose who he was gonna. Once he knew all these guys were selling heroin, he couldn't pick and choose which one he was going to kill. If you don't kill them all, you don't, can't kill any of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was your first introduction? When did you first meet Angela?
I met Angela at the same time I met John, when I was like 13 years old, when I started running around, when I ventured off my block in Ozone Park, you know, because back then in the neighborhoods in Brooklyn, you know, we all hung out on our block until we were a certain age. Then we drifted off the block. And when I drifted off the block, I started staying by a pizzeria on 101st Avenue and 93rd Street. And then when my father knew I was running around the neighborhood, he took me to all these social clubs to let them know that I was his son, so they wouldn't hurt me if I did something stupid. And they would also look out for me, on the other hand. So he brought me to all, because there was a lot of clubs, and he brought me to Charlie Wagons. I already knew from childhood, because he strained out my father and his brother Danny. So I knew them my whole life. So them I knew. And he took me to Charlie's club, and, you know, I met John and... I met Angelo, and I met all of them at the Club Genie, and all of them I met at the Bergen Fish Club. And they also had another club on Sutter Avenue, Crescent Street. And I would see them there when I started dating my first wife. She lived up the street from them. And one day we were driving up Crescent Street, and I asked my father if he knew them. That's the first time I met Johnny Coniglia. That was his club. And we were driving up the block, and they were all standing outside. And I asked my father if he knew them. I was like 17 at the time, and he said, yeah. And I said, introduce me to them, because Alice lives up the block, and she always passes here. And a couple of them had the hots for her, honestly, you know. And so we pulled up, and we got out of the car, and my father introduced me to them and said, you know, my son's dating Alice Mayoni. And they go, all right. And then they stopped saying hello to her. She got mad at me. She goes, what did you and your father do? They don't even say hello to me anymore. But that was the first time I met Johnny Koenig. So I met them when I was a little kid. Okay. And then, you know, and I, it's funny, because, I, you know, as far as the heroin trade is concerned, Sal, his brother, was the guy. He was, mm-hmm. I think Angelo and Jeannie and them got more hands on after Sal pretty much died. Or maybe went on the lam. I mean,
I think he eventually wound up dying in a plane crash.
Yeah, he died in a plane crash. Yeah. They only found part of his body. Him and his wife, unfortunately, him and his wife died in a plane crash.
Was it just them together in the plane crash? And like a private plane?
It was a private jet, right? Okay. It was a private jet. They were flying to Florida. You know, it's funny, because Sal, I was in after he went on the lam, I was in this club in Florida years ago, and it was called the Limelight or something like that. And I'm sitting at the bar with a couple of people, and this guy walks up to me, like, you know, hair and like a mustache and everything and glasses, and he walks up to me and he goes, what are you doing? So I look at him, what am I doing? He goes, what's my, you know, recognize me. Then I heard his voice. I went, Sal? It was his brother. It was Sally Quack. It was his brother. I said, what? He goes, what's that? You don't recognize me? Oh, you recognize me when I got you out of 106th Precinct that night, right, when you were a kid. And we started talking, and he told me, of course, send my regards to my... And then I told my father the next day, because my father was living afar. I said, you'll never guess who I ran into last night. He goes, what is this? What is he, crazy? I said, I didn't even recognize him. But, yeah, but when he left, when he went away... And he got killed. That's when Jeannie and all of them were probably pretty much more hands-on. Because they weren't going to let it go. I mean, you're talking about crazy money. So there was no way they were going to give it up.
Well, they did say Sal was more of the money guy. He had a lot of money stashed away. Oh, he handled a little bit better than maybe Angelo, I mean, and some of them did.
You're talking about major. I mean, you're talking about this guy sold heroin to the biggest dealers in the city. You know what I mean? Yeah. At Harlem. I mean, who knows the money they made? Who knows?
Yeah. And see, that's the issue with some of these. When you watch some of these movies, you catch some of these names, but that's why it's good for people like me to have a guy like you that can give us some of these insights into it. Is there any, like, memorable Angelo stories from the street that you can share with us?
That I was involved in?
What? Involved in, heard of, or whatever, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, he was one of the guys that was on the hit on Tony Plate. I mean, that, you know, that was, so Tony Plate was a soldier in the Gambino family. Mm-hmm. He was very, very good friends with my father. I knew him. I met him many times. He lived in Florida. He hung out at the Diplomat Hotel. Very wealthy guy, very charismatic. And when he used to come up to New York, he always came to see my father whenever he was in New York. He had the unfortunate experience to get arrested with Arnel De La Croce. Arnel De La Croce didn't want to go back to prison. And they decided to kill Tony Plate. And the word was that they're doing it because he had a big mouth, which he probably did. And he got Neil jammed up. So the only way for Neil to beat the case was to have no co-defendant. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, Angelo and Willie Boy Johnson and John were the three guys that went to Florida to do the hit. And how I know this is because, like I said earlier, Angelo was my father's source of information, and my father was very close to Tony Plate. And I remember that my father and I and Angelo were talking, and my father, after Tony Plate disappeared, my father asked Angelo, how did Tony Plate, how did he go out? And Angelo said, he went out like a trooper. He said, he went out like a man. And unfortunately, Tony Plate was with another guy, like just a guy that went to dinner with him. And he went too. And he said, the other guy was like, oh my God, carrying on and screaming and everything. But he said, Tony Plate went out like a man. And, it's funny because after that happened, Lenny DiMaria, who was a captain in the Gambino family, who my father straightened out, he told me we all should have figured out then to get out of that life after Arnel had Tony Plate disappear. You know, my personal experiences with Angelo were always good. He was a character. You know, I got along good with him. I only had one, not a beef, I had one. So my brother was, my brother had a major marijuana business, really big in the 70s into the 80s. He had a really big marijuana business. And of course, you know, it wasn't only heroin we weren't allowed to. So we weren't allowed to basically sell drugs, period. And back then, they considered marijuana a drug, not like today. They're selling it out. You could go up to the corner and buy it in the candy store. You know what I mean? But back then it was considered a drug. I mean, you went to jail for it. And my brother had a major business. And Angelo, this is after Sally died, and Angelo was grabbing up all these drug businesses and everything. And he sent for me, and I went to see him. And he says to me, listen, what do you and your brother want to get your father killed? So I said, what are you talking about? He goes, you've got to stop with this pot business, selling pot all over the five boroughs. I said, stop selling pot business. I said, you selling heroin. I told him, you want me to stop selling pot? Like, what am I not? No, I don't know you're selling heroin. I said, you're selling heroin. You want me to stop selling pot? What are you kidding me? I said, what do you want? What do you want to take over our pot business too? I said, what do you want to just take over everything? I said, what are you kidding me? And he sort of like, well, you're going to get your father killed. I said, I don't know what to tell you. You want us to stop selling pot and you're selling heroin. I said, I don't understand, you know, what you're trying to say here. Is the bottom line that you want to take over our pot business? You want to take it from us, or you want to, I don't get it. And, you know, and then we just left. I said, well, my brother's not going to not sell it. And if you want to go tell my father, because my father, he knew, but he made out he didn't know.
Right.
You know, he knew it, but he made out he didn't know. You know, so then Angelo just dropped it, and, you know, and it never interfered with our relationship. Like, there was no bit of feelings, or he never took it out on me in another way, in any shape, way, or form. It just went away.
Yeah, and I think I seen it in a quote where he was talking to some people about, you know, you mentioned his brother that did buy in a plane crash. I think the only thing they found was an arm.
Yeah, an arm and a foot, I think, or something. I went to his funeral.
As crazy as it sounded, he said, you know, I could have dealt with it better if he'd been shot in the head in the middle of the street. Yeah, he's like, now it's like I don't even have him to say goodbye to.
And it's funny because everybody makes a big stink about them being drug dealers. I mean, here his brother was a known His brother was a known heroin dealer, yet at his funeral mass, they had a funeral mass for him at St. Helens in Howard Beach, which I attended, and everybody, Neil was there. I mean, everybody was there. So even though they all knew he was a heroin, they still respected Angelo that much that everybody went to his funeral mass in St. Helens.
Well, a lot of the famous hits that you hear about, like, you know, the McBratney hit on the one that we mentioned on John Gotti's episode, I think supposedly he was even sent after Casso after the hit on Frankie DiCicco when the car bomb blew him up. So you could tell that his name was usually mentioned in some of those more memorable hits, and John had to trust him to put him in that.
Casso hated Angelo.
Yeah.
They shot Casso in the stomach.
Yeah.
They tried to kill him. They hated each other. The Lucchese's did not like the Gotti crew or the Carrazza crew. Vic Camuso did not like Nicky Carrazza. They did not like Angelo. They did not like them. Even when I was in prison, the Lucchese guys didn't, you know, would talk bad about them, didn't like them. Like they, one night, this Frankie Bones, he was a captain with the Lucchese's. He was in school kill with us, and we were at a, we were out in the yard, me and my co-defendant Sal Pecchio, and Greg DePalma Jr. And Frankie Bones, and we were sitting on a bench, and Frankie Bones started talking bad about Nicky Carrazza, and Sal looked at him and go, "You're talking, Nicky Carrazza's a gangster. You couldn't be a pimple on Nicky Carrazza's ass." He told Frankie Bones. He goes, "You know, because we stuck up for Nicky, you know," and he got a little insulted about that, Frankie Bones, but he didn't, you know, he didn't put his hands on Sal or anything. Who would, you know, but he wasn't happy with that remark. So there was always a lot of friction there, and it stems back from, you know, many, many years ago. Nicky, it stems back because of Canarsie. Vic Camuso's out of Canarsie. There was always beefs with Canarsie. And Gas Pipe always beefed with the Gotti crew.
Yeah. I forgot that one guy that he killed, but supposedly when Angelo and him were trying to take out Casso, you know, they'd done a hit on him, and it didn't, obviously it wasn't successful. Yeah. But Casso got a hold of that other guy and tortured him for about 12 hours, I think.
Yeah,
shot
but
him
you,
repeatedly.
You know, you got to see, like Sammy the Bull talks about that because he knows the, you know, Sammy the Bull and this, and I saw his show pertaining to this, and I didn't know that until I think the guy's name was it starts with an H, the guy's name that he that the
Heidel. Yep.
The
yep.
cops brought him, the mob cops, the guy that played my father,
Louis Eppolito, and Stephen Caracoppa,
the guy that played
got
my father, and Goodfellas. They took him to, but he called up Joe Butch, and somebody else went to his house. And he brought them downstairs and made Heidel tell them what he told before he was tortured.
Right.
He made him tell them who ordered it, Eddie Leno and all them, who ordered the hit and all that on him. And they left Heidel there. And that's when Gas Pipe tortured him for information, killed him. And when they went back to Sammy the Bull, who was the underboss, Joe Butch, and I believe it was Jimmy Brown. And Sammy the Bull talks about this. He told them, and you left them there, because Heidel was with the Gambinos.
Yeah.
And Sammy got mad at them for they left them there. Like they should have, once Gas Pipe told them, and they heard from Heidel what happened, and they knew what happened, they knew where the blame lied, they should have not left the kid, the guy there. Like, I know my father. If that kid was with my father would have never left him there. And Sammy said the same thing. Sammy the Bull said that he was very upset with them for leaving the kid there. Like, they should not have left without that kid because the kid was with them. It was a matter of respect now, and he's with us, and you ain't going to kill the kid. You've heard what you heard now. We'll handle it from here. And they left the kid there to be tortured and to be killed. And Sammy talked about that on one of his shows. I didn't know that part of it until I saw Sammy's show.
Wow. Mm. Now, I did read conflicting reports, and this kind of goes back to the movie, you know, True or False. Like I said, I mentioned in the 96 Gotti, it showed him going up and feeding Angelo when he was real sick. But then in other reports, I heard that Gotti pretty much just wrote him off and refused to go see him even when he was sick.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that? And how
yeah,
that really
I don't.
Happened?
I don't. I. You know, I heard the same thing that, you know, John pretty much stood away from him after that. But did go to his funeral. I think he did go to his funeral. Okay. I mean, yeah, he pretty much stayed away from him after that. But like I said, I think that was just more political than anything.
Right.
You know.
And Angelo did have two sons, right?
Yeah, one of them is a made member of the Gambino family. He had two sons, and he also raised Sal's kids. When Sal got killed in the plane crash, Angelo and his wife more or less took them in, too, and they lived with Angelo.
Well, I think that about does it, man. Yeah, it gives everybody a little insight on some of these guys that maybe you don't know too much about. So I hope you all enjoy.
That's the end of the episode. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And Wade, you have anything going on? What do you need?
Absolutely. You can head on over to Crime and Entertainment. We're on the YouTubes, also on all the audio platforms, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, all that good stuff. We try to drop content about once a week out there. So we got the also Behind the Gangsters that you and I doing there, as well as many of other great interviews. So head on over there for good crime content as well.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Reform Gangsters.
Well, boy, oh boy, I hope everyone is enjoying these things. As I said earlier, if you are, head on over to YouTube, like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. That way you get a notification every time we drop a video. We drop these Behind the Gangsters, usually in the middle of the week. We like to surprise you with these, folks. A little thank you for tuning in. Also on the audio side of things, whatever platform is your particular choice, be it Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, we're on everything, folks. Do whatever you can do to help us out. Leave us a good review. Give us 5 stars, purple hearts, whatever it is. I'm not an Apple guy, but whatever you do over there to show appreciation, that is the easiest, the cheapest way you can help us out here at Crime and Entertainment. Really helps drive us up the charts. And obviously, I know all you people are on social media, or at least most of you. Sharing the show helps an awful lot, too. Doesn't cost you a dime. Hit that share button. Share a particular episode that you like. Maybe some friends catch on to it. That's really how we, you know, make our bread and butter over here, is getting the word out about the show. But we appreciate everyone listening each and every week. Can't thank you enough. A lot of work goes into this stuff, but at the end result, we hope you're pleased with it. I know I'm pleased with it. And these are just really, really fun. And we got a lot more coming. We got one on Sammy the Bull. We got Frankie Loke coming. You know, it's going to be a great year here in 2023. We're going to round at about the halfway point here. We're in July, so after coming up on July, and I think we're going to finish 2023 out very strong here at Crime and Entertainment. So we appreciate all you guys listening, and that'll do it for today's episode of Behind the Gangster.